Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, in Vancouver here on the Friday morning, we're still into sunny California weather. Hey, I'm not complaining, but it would be nice to see some of the fall rains.
Yeah, but usually when the fall rains arrive, they stick around for 6 months.
Don't we know it?
Yes, Vancouver has a reputation for being a rainy city, but we've gone 4 months with virtually no rain. And the high on Saturday will be 25 in the valley next to Vancouver, 75 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So you're right, California fall.
Yep, it is.
I have a couple of questions today. Bob, our first one comes from Michael. Hi, Jim and Bob. Increasing numbers of financial pundits are saying that the Fed is trapped and that the bond vigilantes are riding into town, shooting up interest rates, intent on taking control of the long end of the bond market. Bob, who will win the gunfight at the Eccles Building Corral?
The financial markets, of course, are winning. The Fed is just posing. And I'd like to point out that when you're at the end of a bubble, or part of the bubble and part of the ending of the bubble is short rates, like T-bill rates, going up. And they have been going up straight. And then as part of the bubble, you had one of the greatest bull markets for long bonds ever. And at the time, we were writing it up as asset price inflation. Bond prices were being inflated because all the central bankers had the pedal to the metal. The street was buying bonds, and at the same time, corporations and governments were issuing bonds. It's typical of a great financial bubble. So then it ran out. And so what we want to do is on the struggle, the Fed has been making lots of noise about deliberately raising interest rates. And the reason we're doing that is the T-bill rate has gone up to almost 4%. And on previous work, I've noted that the changes in market rates of interest, like T-bill rates, trade all of the time. So, and as part of the end of the boom, they go up, and the Fed had no alternative but to raise rates. And my guess here is somewhere within the next month or so, the T-bill rate will come down, and then a month or so after that, the Fed will find a reason for lowering rates. And whether there's a winner or not at the Eccles Building Corral, the Fed will always be the loser because it is the artificial entity that thinks they're running things. So, and then there's another part of the question.
Also, given a deeply oversold market in the short term, many are looking for some event or remark by Fed Chair Powell that will ignite any day now a great bear market rally. Bob, could the often cited presidential election year financial cycle once again move the markets?
I'd forget about presidential cycles. And as to the Fed backing off, it won't back off until the contraction serious enough to be lowering T-bill rates. So, yeah, they are caught between a crock and a hard place. And there's no getting out of it. I think that when this is over, there will be many critical economists look at the nonsense. And the nonsense goes back to before the formation of the Fed, when powers that be then did understand that if you had a financial crisis, it would be followed by a recession. So then they attributed all kinds of magic abilities to the Federal Reserve System, and one of which was, as a lender of last resort, it would prevent the credit crisis that prompted recessions. So the theory has been, since before the formation of the Fed, that the Fed would prevent recessions. Well, the one that occurred with COVID, that was number 19.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at things in reality, it only would have taken one recession to disprove that notion. But there's been 18 others since, so no, it doesn't work. It's a whole, as I said, it's a crock. But here's what's going to happen. There will be some recognizable economists who will criticize the notion that the Fed can prevent recessions. And then you're going to have the ordinary public who are going to look at the Fed and say, hey, you guys spent trillions of our taxpayers' dollars touting that you could prevent bad things from happening. So I expect as the contraction gets worse that there will be a movement to get the Federal Reserve back on gold, because that's the only way you can discipline these guys, and I would welcome it myself. So, yep. So that was an interest rate question, essentially. And now we have another interest rate question, and I can sort of elaborate a little on this one.
Sure. The question is, Bob, where do you think interest rates on long-term U.S. treasuries will go?
Well, they have been trashed. And in nominal terms, the interest rate has gone up, and as they're writing, it's quite a very severe rise. We're watching now for this move in long treasuries to kind of be maxing out. We're sort of looking at the technicals on it here. And at some point, there may be a brief trade in here in the long treasury, but just strictly for experienced trading desks. But there's a whole vast array of interest rates out there, as I've covered with the previous question. The short rates, as designated by T-bills, are going to go down, because once the boom is and the bust is really underway, the very careful money out there goes to the most liquid items, and one of the most liquid items are shorter than 1 year treasuries in the U.S. So they'll be parking there as the T-bill rate goes down to zero. And then further out, at the long end, there will be some trades for treasuries. And then elsewhere, you've got the risk market as represented by corporate or municipal bonds. And you've got, as we've been in a crazy buying binge for credit instruments. So they have bought a whole lot of junk bonds, and it'll be discovered that in a contraction they won't be able to service their debt. So they will eventually head down to next to nothing, no bid, you know, default, that sort of thing. And then you have the next layer, which would be your investment-grade corporate bonds. And then, again, with a contraction, there will be an inability to service that debt. So there will be many investment-grade bonds downgraded to junk, and in which case, you've got the same problem that many fund managers have had of treasuries lately. That was just to get out of a market hit. But in the case of owning investment-grade corporate bonds, when they turn to junk, that fund manager has to sell them. And where are the bids going to be? So, and then we're going to add one more complication to it, and that's real long interest rates adjusted for the rate of inflation. And that one over centuries tells the story, and the real long interest rates, because of the party time in the bond market, they go down in the final stages of a great financial bubble, and they have. And then, as a sign of the bubble being over, real long rates have gone up, and they've gone up a couple of percentage points. But on our work on all of the bubbles back to 1720, the typical increase can be 10 to 12 percentage points, which is a horror show. And that's ahead of us. So on the interest rate side, there's all kinds of complications depending where you are on the curve and where you are in risk. And also, the yield curve. Let's discuss that one. And in a boom and its transition to a bust, there's a terrific demand for short-term funds by speculators, and that drives up the T-bill rate. And the curve becomes inverted when short rates become higher than long rates. Usually we follow the two-year to the 10-year, it's a popular one to watch, and it has inverted, and we've got the yield curve back to 1867, and there is, the number one rule is that the curve inverts, you get a recession. That's it. Every time in all of those generations back to 1867, every time the curve inverts, you get a recession, and this... Then the next one is a variation on that, is that if the yield curve and the action as the yield curve inverts is quite intense, the more serious the contraction will be. And this one on inverting is not as intense as it's been in the past. But nonetheless, the key thing is that the recession has probably started and it was inevitable.
Bob, I've been watching a lot of debate on the different financial channels, and everybody says the Fed is so out of touch with reality. Last year, remember, they kept screaming, this inflation is transitory, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, once you start to see inflation, it's like any problem. The longer you let it fester, the worse it's going to get. It's like an infection. And I liken what the Fed does. So once inflation starts going down, they're going to keep hiking rates. It'll take them a year or two to realize, hey, the thing's done.
No, the Fed is following the market. It's not imposing policy. It's just touting policy. No, the T-bill rate is close to reversing and heading down. And then the short rates go down and the Fed will follow, and the Fed will eventually end up with, a quarter of a percent. But the Fed is all talk. Now, it spent most of the last decade worried that inflation wasn't high enough. It had to be at 2% or something awful would happen, so they kept the pedal to the metal, not understanding that they're in a great financial bubble. And, of course, going back, they had the huge global boom in commodities in 1920, the very hard crash in commodities in 1921, and then the Fed was riveted by deflation, and they decided there wasn't enough inflation, so they had the pedal to the metal through the 1920s, not understanding that they were in yet another great financial bubble. The financial bubbles in textbooks don't exist. But they're worth studying, I'll tell you. So the Fed has done the same thing it did in the 1920s. And what they have done is added fuel to financial speculation. And that exercise itself heightens the speculation. So they've made it worse. And then they come around and they figure they can fix it. Oh, no, this is utter madness. And... as I say, there will be some formidable forces of criticism ahead for the Federal Reserve.
Yes, I liken the Federal Reserve with its delayed reaction to pumping bullets into a charging grizzly and continuing to shoot even though the bear is dead.
I like that one.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that caught your attention today: are central banks going bankrupt?
Isn't that a good one? And that was from the Financial Times. So somebody in the article and whoever wrote the headline are being pretty realistic. Yeah, you can go back to March 2021 when suddenly Argentina and Turkey announced that their central banks were out of liquidity. And that was then the start of the contraction post-bubble. And then in June, or the summer of 2021, all of a sudden, China was out of liquidity. And then when we got to more recently here, earlier in the year, all of a sudden the U.S. was out of liquidity. So, yeah. And we've got to look at fractional reserve banking. And what these idiots have done is it's not just fractional reserve, it's fractional reserve, because everything is leveraged. So the Fed is issuing credit that it has no way of being able to redeem it. And then all the participants out there are doing leveraged trades on top of that. So as I said, it is fractional reserve banking hypothecated upon fractional reserve banking, and it's absolute madness.
Headline: world's emergency lending capacity is getting stretched as crisis deepens.
Yeah, but that's covered by the quip about fractional reserve banking. It's crazy, and it's doing what it did in following the 1929 bubble.
Headline: China SCE Shimao units miss $225 million in trust payments.
Yep, that's another sign of a post-bubble contraction, where big names suddenly do not have the ability to service their debt obligations. And that's what this one's about.
Hong Kong property values tumbling as unsold homes pile up.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting, because we know that Vancouver in North America has been one of the craziest and hottest property markets. And that has been due to many decades of Asian money coming to Vancouver. Also, they went to Toronto as well. So with the real estate bubble in the States peaking in 2006, highly leveraged and crashing, the Asian bid wasn't big enough to keep that bubble going, whereas in Toronto and Vancouver, the Asian bid was big enough to keep things going. But now, the Asian bid is going to die. So I think that Toronto and Vancouver house markets are going to take a severe decline, as they did in 1980 after that boom in commodities with gold and silver and crude oil and everything else. And property markets highly speculative in Vancouver, but there wasn't the Asian bid then. So I know that in British properties, reasonably high-end stuff on the North Shore, the prices there within 5 years fell to one-third of the high. And then in average but nice places like Kerrisdale, they fell in half. So that was the Vancouver market without the Asian bid. And it looks like this headline, the Asian bid is getting destroyed in Asia, and it won't be here to support Toronto or Vancouver home prices. I think it's going to be quite nasty.
Well, you like to quote Marcus Tullius Cicero about when bad times happen in the provinces, it's not long before they show up in Rome.
Yeah.
Headline.
Yeah.
The most powerful buyers in treasuries are all bailing at once.
That's true. Yeah, that's the way it goes. When I first started on a trading desk here in Vancouver, the older traders said, you know, you'd see the trust companies or various fund managers come in and, oh, get me into the market. I got to buy. It's going straight up. And then a week later, that was, you know, close to the top. And then the reverse, and then it was get me out. So we used to call it the GMI market, which would soon be followed by a GMO market. And this is what we got going on here now. It's a GMO market. Get me out.
Headline, Russian elite voice, growing anger as losses mount in Ukraine.
Yeah. Now, the establishment in Russia has been doing a lot to quell any opposing opinion. But it's got to be there because they're looking at body bags coming home. The Russians are running out of ordnance. And then their generalship has been hopeless. The large problem has been inadequate weaponry and inadequate generalship. So it's a loss. I mean, it is a big losing situation. So the only question is, how does the world help Putin get out of it? And maybe public opinion in large parts of Russia will help out. Also, let's look at the Kremlin administration. There's bound to be some solid thought there that says, hey, Vlad, this ain't working. Let's find a way to get you out. And getting him out is getting him out of the game. It's been a disaster. And also, within the post-bubble contraction, they're not going to have the money to keep the prosecution of war going. You got to have treasure to fight a war, and they don't have it.
Our last headline, what recession? The global superyacht industry is booming. And just here locally in North Vancouver, I noticed Dennis Washington, the owner of the Washington Marine Group, his superyacht is all prepped for the winter. It's been shrink-wrapped, including the helicopter. It's 100 meters long and worth $250
million. Wow. Now, but these are, you got to realize that these are old orders made during the boom. And you've got a construction time period, so they're still coming off the shelves. Now, in yesterday's piece, I did compare it to back in 1929, in the late, that boom, there was a terrific demand for very luxurious cars. So you had, your standard car, like the Model A Ford, had a four-cylinder, and then other cars had straight sixes. And then some, like Buicks, had straight eights, and that was all very grand. But then, to get really grand, you had a V12.
Ooh.
And Cadillac and Chrysler were making a very fine V12 cars. And then, in order to top that, Cadillac spent a fortune developing a V16 engine. And the reason for the multiple cylinders is they're a smoother-running car, but in those days, even with a chauffeur, shifting gears was not a happy condition. So the ideal was that you could have a car that could start in top gear, or you could be rolling along, put it in top gear, saving a couple other gears, at about 5 miles an hour, and then the low torque and very smooth engine, you could accelerate right up to whatever the top speed was. So these were very grand. Very pricey. I think the conversion to current terms was like $160,000. But they sold 2,500 of them in 1929. And then the sales started dropping off. So, and I remember reading an article about that even those who could, after the crash, who could still afford to buy grand cars, they thought buying a V16 was too ostentatious and bought the V12s. So, yeah. So you've got this, the high-end items are designed during the boom and seem to come to market during the crash.
Yes, you should check out the Atissa 4 and its helicopter there on the North Shore.
Okay.
In North Van. A very impressive ship. What I like about the design, it looks like it's going both backwards and forwards at the same time.
Okay, I'll look it up.
I hope to get a ride on it someday.
Okay.
Bob, you know Dennis Washington, don't you?
No.
Bob, thank you so much for answering our questions and putting up with me today.
Not at all, Jim. I had a good time today and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.